You're listening to The Retail Perch with Shekhar Raman and Gary Hawkins.
We're going to discuss industry challenges and opportunities in grocery retail, AI, current and upcoming trends, and so much more.
Hello, folks. This is me, Shekhar, coming at you alone. And last time it was Gary coming at you alone, except that this time, this episode is different because Gary is the guest again. So welcome back, Gary, to the Retail Perch.
Thank you, Shekhar. Great to be all with right. you again, as always.
Terrific. So I know, obviously today you're not, he's our esteemed guest, and I'm going to let you guys know why he's the guest. Because in a couple of weeks from now, he is launching his book. Well, he's already launched it, but he's doing the official launch of his book. Third book, Gary?
Fourth book
called Bionic Retail. By the way, we're going to be talking about this on this particular episode. But more than talk about just the book, we're going to talk about Gary. Because what I discovered through this book, and you will too if you get a hold of this, and for those of you, you know, I'm going to show you, I have my copy here in front of me. It's a beautiful cover. I love the color. Gary, I don't know who designed it.
The publisher actually designed it and gave us a couple choices of cover design. And that was the consensus.
I loved it. It just jumps out at you. I think it says innovation, modern. And I think it says everything that you wanted to say, I'm guessing. Right.
Yes. Yeah. No, we all thought they did a great job with it.
Yeah, I think they did a terrific job with this. I think the fact that it's not 600 pages, I was really excited about that. You know, and you can actually get through this in a weekend. And honestly, I got to tell you that the, you know, we'll talk about the book here in a second. But I got to tell you that the content is actually light reading. It's actually enjoyable because it's Gary is interspersed with lots of stories, interesting stories, not only about retail, but he's borrowing from the whole world of innovation and how other companies have turned things around. I really like the example about how you talked about Lego and what they've done for digital transformation. And I mean, there's plenty of stories in here for you to pick through. But I think what we should do here is first get to know the author, right? Of course, you guys, you've been following this podcast. You've heard Gary on 100 plus episodes. So it's not that you don't know Gary, but there's a side of Gary that I don't think you really know very well. And that's what I'm hoping we can try to get into here today and dig that out of Gary before we get into Bionic Retail. So Gary, I know in the introduction to the book, you talk about your background, right? And your growing up years and how you started off and I think this was your grandfather and grandmother that started the store and kind of built it out from there, right?
Yes.
So tell us a little bit, what was it like growing up in Syracuse area back then?
So, yeah, the history is, it was actually my great-grandmother that started the store as a summer farm stand.
After No Victory Garden, right? That's what he said, yeah.
And then, you know, as it grew, and hit that point in time, like in the, well, so a couple things happened. Started it in 34, and then I think it was somewhere around 1940 or thereabouts, the barn burned down. My family, the principal business was dairy farming, but the dairy barn burned down, and that was a time to sort of reconsider what the family was going to focus on. The farm stand had just exploded with business, so they actually moved it probably about 2 miles away to what was becoming the main thoroughfare going north and south through the city of Syracuse. And with that additional traffic, as the supermarket industry began to grow, so grew Green Hills. And, you know, grew from a farm stand to carrying some canned goods, carrying.
So where did the name Green Hills come from?
Again, my grandmother, I believe, came up with that name.
Wow. And what inspired it, you know?
I want to say it was some old radio show that she picked it up from.
Okay.
Yeah.
Interesting. So it was like a small corner store to start.
Small corner store. And then in the early 60s, all the chain stores in the Syracuse market the unions went out on strike and shut stores down. And so literally overnight, the only place people could go to buy groceries and food were the handful of independent stores, Green Hills being one of those. So literally overnight, business just grew exponentially. And wow. It was sort of off to the races at that point. By the late 60s, the store had grown significantly, both physically and, you know, in sales volume. I believe it was in the late 60s, around 70, my father decided to get into the wholesale business, originally thinking to supply principally our store, but quickly grew to supplying other stores. And that's sort of a separate, almost separate story, but briefly, over time, the wholesale business came to focus on convenience stores. And I think at the height of it, when my father sold the business, we were supplying around 500 convenience stores across five or six states.
Wow. 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 Amazing. And you kind of saw all of this happening in front of you, right?
Yes. Yeah. So I, you know, what's was interesting to me, not appreciating it at the time, but literally living through all this sort of gave me a ringside seat to the development of the industry. Right. As it was growing and expanding so quickly.
Right. So at what point did you make a decision that I want to join the family business?
So I guess, you know, as I say in the book, I literally grew up in the grocery store.
Right.
I can remember as a little kid going to the store on Sundays with my father. And on Sundays, the store would close at 1 o'clock. So everybody had the afternoon off with their families. And I can remember riding my bike up and down the empty aisles of the store.
Oh, wow.
So I guess I always knew that sooner or later I would be back in the family business. Mm. So all during the time I was growing up, high school, you know, I did probably close to every job you could think of around the store. To learn more and more. Went off to college. I actually spent a couple years in a separate business that was part of my wife's family's business, advertising marketing business. But then somewhere in the early 80s, my mother became ill. My father really wanted to step away a little bit from all the operating things. I got back involved at that point, which I knew I was going to someday anyway.
Got it. And we should mention that Heather is as important a part of Gary's story as anything else is.
So yeah,
he's
yes.
Front and center and everything. So, yeah. Yeah. So that's amazing, Gary. So at what point, so you talk about in this book some of the things that led to you getting interested in the technology aspect. And I know there's a good section in the book that you talk about the barcode, how that started to change things, although it took a while for it to get adopted. Of course, on the retail perch, if you guys want to listen, you can go back a few episodes and listen to our episode with Paul McEnroe, I think, who was in one of the initial teams that built the barcode. But at what point did you start getting interested in the data side of things?
So
what caused that?
So I think I had always been interested in technology. You know, I owned one of the first Macs, you know, I remember in the box and so on. And gosh, even before that, I think we had an Apple II GS or whatever it was called.
Yeah.
Somewhere around 1990, I began reading about a few retailers in Europe and over in Asia that were launching frequent shopper programs. And what they were doing was providing their shoppers effectively a card with a barcode on it and using that at checkout to trigger electronic coupons. Because you really don't see it today anymore, but back then, retailers would frequently print coupons on the front page of their ad that the shopper would have to tear out, carry into the store to get that special price.
Right. Kind of like the FSIs that evolved into, right?
Yes. Well, because it was the only way retailers had to limit the quantity, right, that you could buy of a sale item. So I read about a few retailers doing this electronically, and you know, knew enough that, gee, that ID could be attached to transaction after transaction, right, bring that back into a database of some type. You could begin building a record of that shopper's purchases over time.
Right.
And, right, you know, that was sort of the light that, that went on for me. And seeing that, quite honestly, at a gut level, because again, this is really early on. Nobody had, right, written the books yet about this, right? Realizing or at a gut level, thinking this could be the way to change the game, right? I mean, I was sitting in Syracuse, New York, one, yes, high volume, successful store, but competing with chains, competing with Walmart, competing with Wegmans, you know, a brutal environment. And through all that, Syracuse as a city and market was continuing to lose population. So it was a tough place to do business. But I thought I saw this as a way to change.
Interesting. Because I like how you've introduced some of the topics. You talk about, you know, you start, well, I'm not going to give away the book here because you got to go get it. It's a terrific read. And you start talking about, you know, I guess the butterfly effect, for lack of a better term. That's what you use, right? The whole chaos theory thing. But, and it's interesting. I was just watching the series on Netflix. It's this new called Three Body Problem.
Yes.
So, you know, it's very famous in Newtonian physics where, you know, Newton, of course, designed the equations of what happens when you have two bodies and they interact due to gravitation. But when you introduce a third body in, it creates all kinds of chaos, right? Yep. Because the initial conditions make a huge difference to exactly what happens in the system. And so you talk about, so how does that relate? How do you relate chaos theory to what's happening in the world of innovation?
So where I was going with that is, you know, anyone in the industry, I think, certainly sees and understands that there's a growing number of new technologies, innovations, capabilities, right, that are flooding into the industry. And if you peel that back just a little bit to understand what's driving that, you know, is the exponential growth of computer processing power, of data, and certainly today, AI. And so I got thinking about, geez, we've got more and more innovation, more and more capabilities coming into the market, and any one of those can really become disruptive, not only transformative, but truly disruptive to retail. And I guess it was that somewhere triggered the thought and analogy over into chaos theory, right? That, you know, what's the line in chaos theory? A butterfly flapping its wings in Beijing can trigger a hurricane, right, in Texas or something, right?
Right.
So, you know, think about, as every new innovation coming into the industry is a butterfly, there's more and more of them. Any one of those can trigger a disruption.
Yeah, and it's interesting because it reminds me, and I, you know, I think for me, I think what stood out in the book is that although it's a lot about retail, I like the way you've kind of woven in these stories that we can all relate to, whether it's watching, you know, a TV show growing up, you know, about the $6 million man, or, you know, Lost in Space, or all those things that you refer to, that I think makes the book so relatable because you can then connect. And I can see, I think, Gary, you're a very analogy driven. You like to find parallels and paradigms, I guess, and draw connections there. And you've done a great job of it in the book. So,
well, I think if you can find the right analogies, the right stories, they can sometimes help make a complex idea a little bit more readily understandable to people. You know, because technology, as you certainly know, can be a very complex thing, right?
Yeah. Yeah.
And so, you know, I guess what I was trying to do is use different stories, analogies to try to help people maybe better understand some of the concepts here.
Yeah. Yeah. And when you talk about the butterfly effect, I mean, of course, people may have seen that Ashton Kutcher movie, The Butterfly Effect,
yeah,
which kind of talks about the same thing. I think, yeah, you also Was it, I don't know which movie was what you refer to, where people go to the 2050 and become time travelers and they can go back in time?
So that was the original story that went back to, I think, the 1950s somewhere.
Right.
But I think where a lot of people know chaos theory from, in addition or beyond the movie you mentioned, is Jurassic Park.
That's right. That's right. Yeah. 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 That's where it goes. Where he steps on a butterfly by mistake and comes back. Right. Yeah, of course, everything's changed. But so one of the things about the butterfly, and this is something I read recently, which I think also drove home the point for me, which is, I think in the 13th or 14th century, whenever Marco Polo came back from China, he brought back with him several pieces of technology, including the water clock, which allowed Venetians to now record universal time, because until then, they didn't have the ability to have a time designated to a point in the day.
Right.
And so now you could say 9 a.m. and people knew what it meant. Otherwise, you would say, let's meet at dawn or dusk or sunset. The other thing was, he brought back the triangular sail. So until then, ships in Europe only had square sails, because they only had to go up and down the Mediterranean, and the winds either blew east or west. And if there was no wind, you could oar your way back to the destination. But what the square ships sails didn't allow navigators to do was get around the bend in Africa.
Right.
So they could only reach the Western African coast. But once they got the triangular sails, Henry the Navigator figured out that they could go around the bend. And of course, that changed the course of history, you know.
Yes.
So it's funny what little things can do and how they can amplify. Now, we can all argue whether that was a good thing or a bad thing. But the fact is, I think it's so true. It happens. And I think the fact that you drive that home is that this is not just a cute movie thing. Right. It's not just something that happens in a movie. This happens in real life. So things that are happening today, whether it is like ChatGPT or, you know, some of these technologies that are coming around, you just don't know what impact or how big an impact it's going to happen.
Well, that's absolutely right. And I think the other important part of that is two parts. Right. There's more and more new butterflies almost every week.
Right.
And the speed from, point of creation to impact is increasing, right? Which I tried to illustrate with the story of the barcode and then computer vision platforms and what I believe is going to happen with augmented reality.
Right. 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 So one of the things you do talk about is, this is why I think every retailer should read this book. Is you talk about how can an organization manage themselves, right? How to thrive in this world where there's a zillion butterflies. And I think it's something that we've talked about on this podcast as well, which is, you know, your organizational structure and how you approach things has to fundamentally change, right?
Yeah.
Technology comes in, but it's of no use if the mindset and the approach and the thinking about innovation doesn't change.
Yeah.
Right? And you can't be sitting under a rock somewhere afraid of stuff or be oblivious of stuff around you. You got to wake up and smell the coffee and kind of know what's going on. So tell me a little bit about how do you see that playing out without, I don't want to give away too much of the book, but.
Well, so that it's really a great call out, because it's really that led me to writing this book. Right. You know, as I talk to people in the retail industry, of companies of all sizes across the country, nearly every day, what I saw happening was executives focused on, this or that new technology, what new capability coming into the market do I need to worry about? Or, what digital native competitor coming in do I need to think about? And the more I heard that, the more I believed and realized that executives were missing the bigger picture, right? That they really needed to shift their focus and look beyond this or that new technology, the next shiny object, to understand that we're now living in a world that has really never before existed, a world of exponential technology growth, where we have now passed the inflection point. And so it's, you know, the change is noticeable and it's accelerating every day. And to the point you were just making, in that world, the organizational structures, practices, processes, cultures that have served retail well for the last century may not no long, you know, may no longer be the right thing. And it's really that retailers being locked into, we've always done it this way, types of practices that I think are limiting so many retailers from getting full benefit of new capabilities, new innovation.
Yeah, the company that jumps out at me when you talk about not adopting innovation or having the right approach to innovation is Blockbuster, right? You don't want to be a Blockbuster
Yes.
in the
Well, and
grocery
you know,
industry.
there's example after example, right?
That's
You know,
right. That's right.
Blockbuster is a classic, Kodak's, you know, is a
That's right.
classic.
That's
Yeah.
right. BlackBerry
Yes.
is a classic, right? Yeah. I mean,
Yeah.
there's so many. That I guess you have to have a culture of I haven't arrived. There's something that's something better. Somebody's sitting in the basement and coming up with the next big idea. And you just gotta have your eyes open. But at the same time, Gary, we talk about this, which is you go to some of these shows, right?
Yep.
Whether it's a Shop Talk or grocery shop, and you just see so much technology. It's overwhelming sometimes. And to find the balance between being innovative and not losing focus off your
Yep.
business. There's a fine balance there, isn't it?
Oh, there absolutely is. And I think where that really leads me, and again, I try to speak to this different places in the book, is I think, you know, in that world that we see today, right? Your point, you go to these shows, you're just overwhelmed with all these new capabilities, innovations, et cetera. And certainly as we go forward, there's only going to be more of that. But I think this is also a time for retailers to truly step back and, you know, take a clean sheet of paper and create a vision for what they think the future of retail looks like, right? I mean, we're rapidly getting to a point, if we're not already there, where nearly anything can be done today relative or using technology. And, you know, historically, retailers, and this continues today, you know, they plug in a new capability, a new solution sort of out of a box from a vendor that they deal with. And it's the same thing, more or less, that each of their competitors are using. I think increasingly, as we go forward, retail has the ability to create their unique future of what they think retail looks like.
Yeah. No, I think, and I obviously, all of this takes strong leadership,
Yes.
clarity, and a consistency of effort. And that's something that also I notice that what separates successful retailers from others who are lagging behind is that the seems like the successful retailers are pretty sure about the direction and they are consistent with their initiatives, right? It's not the idea of the month type of thing. Let me try this month. And I guess it's not easy to change people's behaviors as your shoppers. And
Yes.
it takes, if you're going to change something in your organization, you have to be consistent for a while to start seeing the results, right?
Yes. Yeah. And I think, you know, what we're seeing certainly from an Amazon, but increasingly from a Walmart and from a Kroger is just that, right? They are committed to creating what they each feel is the future of retail and are not settling for, you know, some solution that some third party created that they can just plug in, right? That they are looking at how they can either develop new technologies themselves. And again, those companies have the resources to do that. Or how can they put different pieces of technology together to create something unique?
Right. Yeah. I mean, and then for somebody who's maybe a smaller retailer doesn't have access to those resources. And it seems like, from what I read in your book, the right thing to do would be to have a clear idea of where you want to take your business and look at technologies that will speed up the process of getting there. So understanding a technology for its value it brings to your business and how it could potentially, because, you know, sometimes we are sitting in this cocoon, yep. You know, like you said, you know, I've always done this and it's worked for me. And if you don't know what's coming outside and how you can apply it to your business, you know, you might be disrupted completely, right? And so it's super important. Listen, I you know, me as a technologist, I enjoyed reading this book completely. But I think if you're a retailer out there, you need to get a hold of this book now. I don't know what it takes for you to get a signed copy of this book, but you got to find out when Gary's showing up and show up with your book and get this signed. Definitely something that you want to have on your desk, in your bookshelf, somewhere displayed. So people who come and meet you know that you're kind of cutting edge thinking. That's what's going to give you the book is. So Gary, what's the next book about?
So interesting you ask that. I'm not going to give away too much, okay. But think about bionic retail becoming cognitive, right? The retail organization becoming almost self-aware,
mm-hmm.
is give you a vague hint where my thinking is going.
Got it. So maybe the title should be Conscious Retail or something like that. Yeah. Retail consciousness. There you go.
We'll put right. That one on the short list.
Yeah, there you go. That's awesome. That's awesome. Well, it's been terrific talking to you, Gary. This has been fun as a guest. But again, you know, for those of you who are listening, if you don't already know, we're talking about this book, Bionic Retail by Gary Hawkins, How to Thrive in an Exponential World. And it's fantastic, really fun reading. I got through it in a weekend. So, you know, I'm sure, you know, I can tell you it's engaging enough to do that because not only do you learn about retail, but I think it's just these additional stories that you kind of throw in. And I'm sure it took some research to pull them all together. How long did it take you to write this book?
So probably somewhere around 8 months from okay. Start to finish. You know, I don't consider myself a natural writer. So I, you know, several times would start it, get a few chapters in, say, no, that's not the order or the sequence I want, and sort of rip it apart and start over.
Nice. And for those of you who don't have the time to read, I believe Gary is also putting out an audio book version of this, right?
That's right. So the book is available for pre-order now on Amazon and Barnes & Noble. It will ship and be released on April 16th is the publication date, so only a couple weeks away. And the Audible version will also be available.
Oh, yeah. And then we got to tell them about the event. We're
that's
doing
right. So,
a book launch.
So, Shaker, you were kind enough to agree to co-host with me. We're doing a virtual book launch event on April 16th at 12 noon Eastern time. And we'll have on, in addition to you and I, let's see, we've got Mike Steigers, president of Wakefern, Tom Furphy from Consumer Equity Partners and Replenium, Doug Baker from FMI, and then Zach Bello. For those of you who may not know Zach, he's head of biz dev with ProdX today, but his past, he was part of the innovation team at Kroger and then led innovation at Hy-Vee. And Zach has got a lot of great stories and information also.
That's fantastic. Yeah, I'm looking forward to that. So thank you, first of all, for inviting me to host with you. That's going to be fun. So So those of you, it's 12 p.m. Eastern, April 16th.
Yep.
Correct. And it's online. It's going to be a webinar type.
Yeah.
Event,
yes.
Right.
Yeah.
Gary?
Be a webinar type event, and the easiest.
And how are they going to find information on it?
So the easiest way to find information on it is just connect to me on LinkedIn, and look at my posts. There's a number of them. On the virtual launch and webinar, and the link is in that post to register for the webinar.
Got it. Is it also on GaryHawkins.info or?
So you can go to GaryHawkins.info and also BionicRetail.com.
Got it. So BionicRetail.com, GaryHawkins.info, LinkedIn, find the link, register for the event, and we'll see you there. It's going to be a lot of fun. Gary, thank you again so much. You're one of the guests. Obviously, I can't say, give me your address. I'll mail you this cup. You already got the cup. So it's been a terrific episode. Again, thank you so much, Gary. This is fun. And we'll be back to our regular programming next week.
All right. Thanks for having me on.
Make sure you guys, we'll see you guys all on April 16th. Make sure you tune in for that book launch and order the book on the 16th. So I was lucky enough to get a copy ahead of time. So if you're in Gary's good books, so to say, you might have gotten a copy too. So anyway, thanks, Gary. And it's been terrific chatting with you.
Thank you.
Make sure to join us every Monday and connect with us at The Retail Perch on Instagram and Facebook.
And if you have any questions, feel free to email us at theretailperch@birdseye.com.
Until next time, this is Shaker.
And this is Gary, signing off.